Zeroing in now on gasoline electric hybrid vehicles with Eric Powers, who heads the Madison Hybrid Group. It holds Hybrid Fest, Green Drive Expo. That always comes up in July, the third weekend in July. So we can mention that, but we certainly want to zero in with him on these hybrid vehicles and take your questions as we move along today. And if you'd like to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Eric Powers, welcome. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
You recently returned from the Detroit Auto Show, and I guess there were more alternative fuel vehicles than have ever been there.
Yeah, more than I've seen in the years that I've been going. It's interesting to see how it's gone. You know, 5 years ago even, there probably wasn't much. You know, certainly MPG and things were talked about, what sort of gas mileage cars were getting, but boy, nothing like this last time. Even in past years, I could go around and, you know, take pictures of, you know, 9 or 12 vehicles and have plenty of time to do things in between. Boy, this year, it just wore me out trying to take a picture of all the vehicles that were there. It was great to see.
What was the most impressive for you?
Well, you know,
just
again,
the number, I suppose.
Yeah, the number, and to see, you know, even the $100,000 cars like the Tesla electric car Roadster there, but also to see again manufacturers like, you know, Kia there with hydrogen vehicles, or Hyundai there with hybrids, and you know, Ford, and just to see everyone there. So it was great.
It sounds like it would have been a lot of fun, and already pretty much every one of our lines are filling up. Well, Toyota has pretty much dominated, if I'm not mistaken, the hybrid market. What is it, 70% share?
Yeah, somewhere close to there.
But Honda's now coming on to challenge them a little bit, I think.
Well, Honda's always had vehicles a little bit different than the Toyota vehicles. And, yeah, they're coming back, reusing the name badge of the Insight, which is it used to be a 2-seater vehicle, smaller vehicle, gets incredible gas mileage. I actually drive one, and so today coming in here, I got about 65 miles per gallon in this cold. But the new Insight's going to be a 5-door vehicle and 5-passenger vehicle with a lift gate and fold down seats. So it's a little bit more practical than my 2-seater vehicle that I use.
But priced pretty reasonably or competitively.
Yeah, they're talking about it being less than $20,000 for this particular vehicle, and I think that'll be interesting to see how many people will go for that price.
It will be, and boy, I imagine Toyota will be looking at it pretty carefully too.
Yeah, the one difference I notice, and people really need to think about this when they go look at them. They have similar shapes. Overall, but there definitely are two different sized vehicles. So you'll need to really decide what it is that you need and sort of look from there. Even though they're similar shapes, it's a different size. And when you get them side by side, you'd notice that. And I was really excited to go to Detroit and actually be able to sit in it and feel the difference between the two cars.
What about our American Fords?
Ford had an incredible display there. They're really going to be promoting their new hybrid vehicles that they have out there, the Ford Fusion, and with it getting just over 40 miles per gallon, I think it's 41 combined, that's going to be really enticing to people, and especially for those people who've said, you know, I'm waiting for the American manufacturers to come out with a hybrid sedan that fits my needs and fits what I'm looking for. I think when people see this, it'll be something they might really be interested in.
What about the SUV market in hybrids?
Well, you know, it's certainly for SUVs, you know, the first thing to realize is overall they get less gas mileage. And so you're not going to see an SUV with 40 or 50 miles per gallon. And so usually if you're making a choice for an SUV, you realize that up front.
Sure.
And there could be some real percentage-wise, there could be some real percentage gains. For example, like the Chevy Tahoe, when you look at something like that, you know, you might be expecting to get in a regular internal combustion engine, non-hybrid, maybe getting 15 if you're lucky, if you're driving pretty conservatively. Mm-hmm. And you can move up to the hybrids and get 20. Now, again, 20 miles per gallon, when I'm driving my little car, I wouldn't be I don't know if I could possibly get my gas mileage that low. When you're driving an SUV and that's something you really need, you know, you'd be pretty excited getting an additional 5 miles per gallon. That's a you know, almost a third percent, yeah. a third jump in yeah. your gas mileage.
Well, Randy in Chippewa Falls has a question for you, so let's just go right there. Randy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I was wondering about the cost and the life of nickel-cadmium batteries in hybrid cars, or if they even use the batteries in hybrid cars.
Sure, that's a good question. First, you had said the nickel-cadmium batteries, and really there aren't any vehicles that use nickel-cadmium. They actually use nickel metal hydride, NIMH. You'll see that. You know, and we used to have you know, cameras and other consumer electronics had NiCad batteries, but there certainly aren't vehicles that have NiCad. The nickel metal hydrides are batteries that are mainly being used right now. There are some that are looking to have lithium batteries in the future because they're much more energy dense. You can you don't have to use as much space to get the same amount of power out of them. Cost wise, you know, they certainly are more expensive than lead acid batteries, which is what we have in vehicles today. The lead acid batteries, though, take a lot more space and a lot more weight. If you want to have the same power density in your hybrid car today, instead of having the nickel metal hydride, you put in lead acid, you'd have quite a few hundred pounds of batteries in there. So they certainly are more expensive than the lead acid batteries, but they are more power dense and certainly do use less space. As far as for cost, you know, for the most part, you can't really go up to a dealer and plunk down your credit card and say, you know, I would like a new battery for my Prius or for your Honda Insight or whatever it might be. But if you were able to do that and just, again, walked up to the parts counter, you know, it would probably cost you a couple thousand dollars for the battery alone. Realistically, if you're someone like me, you'd probably say, well, rather than maybe going to the dealer and plugging down my 2000, maybe I'll look to see if I can get a remanufactured one from somewhere else. And you certainly can do that for less than $1,000.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks, Randy, for calling. Pat in Rice Lake, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hello. I guess I was wondering, you know, they talk about efficiencies in cars. Like, let's say an electric vehicle, they say equivalency of 100 miles to the gallon in, you know, that they're that efficient. But if we talk, what's the real efficiency when you go back all the way to the point of generation for, let's say, a plug-in car? You know, if you're generating electricity, obviously there's some loss of efficiency, transmission, and so on. What do you end up with real efficiency?
Well, you know, I think, how's that go? You know, there's lies,
yeah.
damn lies and statistics. And I think it really depends on who's doing the you know, looking at the overall, you know, what inputs you put in, what inputs you don't consider in the production and all those things. So, you know, I'm overall a proponent that would say, you know, there is going to be an advantage to having these hybrid electric cars when you put in all the inputs. And again, I think the real issue here is what inputs are people considering as part of that discussion? What inputs aren't they putting in there?
Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling. Julia in Mondovi, your turn now. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I had a question. We had bought two of the Honda Insights hybrids, manual transmissions, 2002 model, and for about $22,000 a piece. But it was well worth it to us. I mean, the gas mileage was like, we would get on the average 65 miles.
Sure.
And, you know, we'd be doing highway speeds on the interstate, you know, 65 miles an hour, no problem. But then they discontinued that in 2006. Honda took the Honda Insight off production, and it was a two-seater, but they said there just wasn't demand. But before we bought that car, I mean, we really didn't know much about it. I mean, we never saw it advertised. I mean, and any time we pulled in anywhere, it was unbelievable. People would almost run up to the car. What is that, an electric car? What, you know, and nobody knew anything about it, but they all wanted to know about it. And so when we were told that, we were just wondering, do you think it's because it was a two-seater that they stop the production, because most people we see commuting are one people, you know, one person per car anyway. But if they come out with a different one, you know, that's like a four-passenger, whatever they're talking about, maybe in 2010, is that going to get that gas mileage, or is it just because the size of the vehicle is so small that it got so much because it was lightweight?
Yeah, the Honda Insight that you do you still have your Honda Insights?
Yeah, we actually sold one. Unfortunately, I wish we wouldn't have, but we sold one of them because we thought they were going to stay in production, but we do have the one still. And actually, we had to have a battery replaced. Mm-hmm. We had one that malfunctioned on us,
mm-hmm.
and they replaced it for us at no charge. They had a 10-year warranty on the battery, but the cost of that replacement was $4,000 for that battery.
Sure. Well, again, I actually drive a manual transmission 2002, so I know the car very well. With that, you know, really some things to think about. You know, it is a two-seater vehicle, and so, you know, that really limits your market right there. Most people, unless you're getting a Corvette or you're getting a Miata or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, you're not willing to give up that extra space for those, you know, very few times when you actually might need it. And we have a family of five. My other vehicle is a minivan, but for when I'm commuting and driving by myself, it is a great vehicle. But only 15,000 of those were made over the course of the 6 years they made it. That's a low production car. It's all aluminum body, all aluminum frame. It weighs less than 2,000 pounds, but it just wasn't popular because it was weird looking two-seater car.
And we're going to talk some more about that car and other hybrids with our guest today, Eric Powers. Stay with us. Talking gasoline electric hybrid vehicles today with Eric Powers, who heads the Madison Hybrid Group. And we're really pleased to have him with us today to talk about hybrid vehicles. Certainly, if you want to join in with a question, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And I should have asked earlier, Eric, but tell us about the Madison Hybrid Group.
Well, the Madison Hybrid Group is actually one of the Midwest's first hybrid car clubs. Started here in Madison and quite a few years ago. And we meet every other month and talk about sort of where we're headed. We talk about our cars, show off our cars, just like any other car club, show what sort of technology we might have updated with or how we've hacked into our cars or made them more aerodynamic. And but we also have other groups that come and join us. And then we also put together the Hybrid Fest Green Drive Expo in the summer time here in Madison. And that's the largest gathering of hybrid car owners in the country. But it's also a two-day consumer show where we talk a lot about all sorts of technologies, green technologies related to transportation.
Well, we have Ben in Duluth, Minnesota, online to ask you a question here. So let's go to Ben. Ben, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if you had heard anything, or I should say if your guest has heard anything about the cars in India. I can't remember. I think it's called just the car. They're going to test run it in India. And it's supposed to get a decent MPG, and they were going to cost about $2,000 a piece. Just curious. Thanks.
Yeah, I haven't run across that at this point, but you know, a good Google search would probably help me out, and we could talk more about it.
There is something called the Nano Car. It was just online. That's a project in India. I think one of the issues with bringing those cars to the U.S. has always been getting by, meeting the safety requirements or the safety standards that we have. Is that true to some extent?
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly seen that's, you know, sometimes seen air-powered cars from India they've talked about and some of these others where it is these inexpensive cars. But, my, you know, from my understanding there in India, the safety regulations are a little bit different than what we require here. But as far as the car, I don't think I've heard much about that.
So we can't help
true.
So we can't help you on that one, Ben, but maybe somebody else will have a comment about it. Scott and Nina, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was calling, actually went to the last guy you had on there, but I was wanting to know how safe are these cars, you know, the batteries when they get into a wreck or something, you know, like the natural gas and that stuff. Ain't that explosive? What would the acid do if it got on you on a wreck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the the components of the electric cars and then also natural gas cars, I mean, they certainly can be problematic overall, but they're put in the vehicles in ways that's going to make them safe. I mean, you got to remember right now you're driving around with in your gasoline car with, you know, 20 gallons of flammable liquid rolling around there, and you know we do pretty well with that when those gets in wrecks. And when it comes to batteries and even compressed natural gas, they're certainly in safe containers. The compressed natural gas, for example, are in metal containers or sometimes even carbon fiber type containers to keep them safe from being punctured or being crushed.
What about insurance? I'm wondering on, let's say, take a hybrid car. If a hybrid car, I would guess if a hybrid car gets in an accident where the batteries are damaged or something, the cost maybe of fixing that's going to be greater than perhaps a standard gasoline. Is that reflected in insurance, or am I wrong all the way around?
Well, I think that actually you'll see a lot of times insurance companies are offering discounts to hybrid owners, often because these are people who, you know, again, for people who do the studies, all those actuarial guys, you know, they look at these people overall maybe driving in a more safe manner. For instance, they may be driving slower to get better gas mileage.
Sure.
Those kinds of things. So there are certainly companies that have offered hybrid discounts.
So it's the other way around, okay,
yeah.
than what I was asking about. All right, Tom and Mequon, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I'm a carpenter, a small businessman, carry a bunch of tools in the back of a truck. I'm wondering if there are any small pickup trucks coming out in the market that are electric, hybrid. I know electric engines have more power than gas engines for the weight. I'm just wondering if that's something that they're thinking about or if that's far off in the distance.
So you're thinking about an all-electric pickup? Is that what you're thinking of?
No, electric hybrid.
Hybrid.
Electric gas.
Yeah, I mean, there were some larger pickups, like the Silverado, for example, that were made that had, you know, small gains. That were hybrids. What they did was really at stoplights, for example, would shut down the engine and then restart it. And so you did get some very small gains in that. I haven't seen any larger pickups, but there are certainly SUVs out there, like the Ford Escape Hybrid and the Toyota Highlander and some of the SUVs. Would that be something that would be something you could outfit to your use?
No, I carry a bunch of lumber and a bunch of tools, and it's pretty dirty and everything.
Yeah,
I was just hoping that they would come out with something like that. It'd be very useful.
Yeah, I haven't seen so many of the pickups yet at this point.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot, Tom, for calling. Hans in Oregon, your turn now. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Eric. How you doing?
Hey, Hans. Good to hear from you.
Good. Yeah, I want to call in regarding a couple things. One is one thing I like about hybrid cars and electric cars and the people that drive them is it tends to feel a lot safer for people who are non-motorists. You know, like when I'm riding my bike along, usually the people that are in Priuses and stuff take their time going around me, and you know the vehicle's not very big. Whereas when it's like an Escalade or an F-250, I feel like I'm sort of like a grease spot in their way. The other thing that I really think our government should be considering is licensing a class of like electric cars that are short enough to park nose in, because it could really make a lot of difference in downtowns across the country, solving a parking problem, the perennial parking problem. But they have to be shorter than a Prius. It has to be like smart car size. And I'm just wondering whether you've heard any indications something might happen along those lines. Basically, say, okay, here's a special license of car, and it's 9 feet and no more, and then we're going to provide special parking for them, because you can get more than twice as many cars parked that way.
All right. Comment, Eric?
Yeah, Hans, I haven't heard anything recently, but it's probably a little bit out of some of what I follow, I guess. You know, I love the smart car. It's a great car. In fact, at the last Madison Hybrid Club meeting in January, When we met over at Smart Motors, we invited the hybrid or the smart car owners to come in and show us their vehicles. It's amazing how small those cars are. I mean, I have a Honda Insight, which is a 2-seater vehicle, which is maybe about a quarter smaller than a Prius. And then I parked the smart car next to that, and it's probably about another third smaller than my car. It was shocking to me to be able to see these really comparisons side by side. So, I haven't actively heard of any thing, but it's not something that I really follow that much at this point.
Okay, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give some others a chance to get in here. Steve in Lake Geneva, your turn now. Hi, Steven.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good, good. My question is, in the hybrid versus a traditional vehicle, is there a big weight difference between the two? The reason why I'm asking is because of the winter months, I'm thinking a lighter car might not handle as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there usually is some weight difference. For example, in some of the SUVs, when they like the Ford Escape, when they put the hybrid batteries in there, they did reduce the towing capacity a little bit on some of those. So there is that difference. In the Civic, same way, it is a little bit heavier with the batteries. I hadn't thought of that from a handling standpoint. Then you don't have to put the sandbags in the back or the bags of salt, right?
Right, right. The reason why because I have a Chevy Cobalt and it really doesn't handle very well in the snow. And I found out that it's a lot lighter than traditional cars.
Yeah. Yeah, well, my car weighs just under 2,000 pounds, so I know all about light cars, that's for sure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Joe had emailed us earlier and wondered about actually the gas mileage or the mileage, let's say the performance of a hybrid in winter and cold weather.
Well, that's always the eternal question, and even at the club meetings when we meet, that's always comes up. Well, it's wintertime and my gas mileage is going down. And then actually in all vehicles, your gas mileage goes down. Yes. In the wintertime. The question is how closely you really watch it. Most of us tend to only look at our gas mileage sort of once in a while, and you sort of have a general idea of what it is. But if you really actively look at it in the wintertime, you'll see that it goes down. And that's certainly because of, rolling resistance and the density of the air and, how efficiently your car can run because it's so cold. During those 15 below days the other weekend, boy, I hated to drive at all because I knew it was going to kill my gas mileage.
All right. Jackie in Plymouth is online next here. Jackie, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for my call.
Sure.
I have a Toyota Prius 2002. And I'm wondering, what can I do to improve my mileage on my car? I try to go to the plug-in, the national plug-in website, and I couldn't get information about what do I do. So can you help me? And then I have a question for my son's Metro.
Sure.
Oh, Metro.
Sure. And actually, I think I just need to put it back up again on the greendriveexpo.com site. But we do have a top 10 tips to get better gas mileage. So if it's not up there, I'll check right after the show. If not, I'll make sure it's up there, by this evening.
Well, can I? Oh,
but we can talk a little bit about it. I mean, some of it's pretty basic. The top thing is, that you have the most control over is slowing down and following that speed limit.
Yeah. Oh, well, I meant in terms of adapting the car. Where do I go to find out about plug-in?
To changing your car so you can get it plugged in.
Yeah, and I don't know if you can do compressed air on a Prius. What can I do to it to modify it?
Right. Well, right now there isn't really an active group of people modifying 2002s for plug-in right now. The later versions, the 2004 and newer, there is plugins. You can actually buy a much larger battery pack that will get you a 30-mile range. It'll cost you about $10,000. But it is possible, and I think as we see some people who are sort of the people that are going out and doing that, hopefully will help bring those prices down. But on a 2002, it's pretty hard. There aren't a lot of people doing any sort of conversions right now of those that I'm aware of.
How about compressed air? Is that not even possible, too?
That would probably be a completely different drive system, and I haven't heard anything with compressed air on the Priuses either.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Thanks. Thanks for calling. And Jim in Wayne, Illinois, up next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon. Great program, gentlemen. Had a question on the Volvo C30. It's a diesel electric. It's supposed to be available in Sweden this year and not until 2010 in the States. Do you have any ideas on how to import a car from Sweden, or is that just too expensive, or do you guys know any tips on cutting through the red tape?
Importing a car from another country overall isn't necessarily, you know, it is difficult and it is definitely costly. And even once you try to do something like a diesel, boy, you're really going to run into a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Because with diesel, the emission standards there are completely different than here. I mean, you've added even more complexity once you try to do a diesel. There have been people who have been trying to import diesel VW Eurovans for years. They would love to get a diesel Eurovan even from Canada down to here because they have such better gas mileage. But, you know, once you run into that problem with the emissions and the EPA red tape, I just can't imagine it will be worth the cost.
Oh, even though that's a diesel electric hybrid, the new one. It's a C30, I think, is the name of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to get
70 miles to the gallon or something.
I could be wrong, but my guess is there that it would be cost prohibitive to be able to do that.
Okay. Have you heard about that car?
I have read a little bit about it in the past.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Ben emailed us and says, I have a Subaru Outback now, and I've been in the market for a hybrid for years, but haven't seen a hybrid all-wheel drive vehicle that isn't an SUV. My Subaru has saved me more than enough times to count in the urban snow-packed streets of Milwaukee.
Well, there is actually one all-wheel drive hybrid out there. My guess is if you're driving a Subaru, it's probably a little bit out of your price range. Most of the sedans out there aren't all-wheel drive. The one that I've driven that's all-wheel drive is the $115,000 Lexus LX 600H, which is a long wheelbase performance hybrid. It's a beautiful car, 455 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 5.4 seconds, weighs about 5,200 pounds. But yeah, it's you know, probably as much as my house cost when I first bought it. So there is actually one out there right now that I'm aware of, but
but you don't know of any that are
no, probably not in that range at this point. I think, you know, again, it's probably additional weight and there just hasn't been the request or demand. So, you know, write Subaru, tell them to make a hybrid a model of their vehicle.
Paul in Clintonville, hello to you.
Well, good morning. Hey, since we're talking wheels and snowpack and the like here, that was interesting about the Subaru. I was wondering, because of the design of these hybrids and such, is it possible to have these cars come equipped with traction control, which I really love, or stability control, even anti-lock brakes?
Yeah, most of them actually do have the traction control and stability control on them, and in the anti-lock brakes that are things that are available on them. That does make a big difference in these vehicles and how they handle. Usually it's an upgraded package. For example, I can think in the Prius, you know, having some of those items, it is an upgraded package. But, you know, the next time my mom goes to buy a new car, I'm going to tell her for sure to take a look at that. And really anyone, if you can afford those options, those safety pieces, as you know, make a big difference, Paul.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Jim in La Crosse was wondered about, since, you know, two-wheel drive is what we've got, are there front and rear, you have front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive in a two-wheel drive with a hybrid?
Most of them tend to be the front-wheel drive configuration at this point. Again, I'm thinking the Lexus, if I recall, that is a rear-wheel drive. I'm almost sure. I have to double-check that, but... But again, well, they do have a $45,000 vehicle as well. So,
oh, $45,000. Oh, getting right down there.
Yeah, right.
Getting down to about the Chevy Volt prices.
Right, right.
Shireen in Springbrook, your turn. Hi, Shireen.
I was wondering, when you have these plug-in cars, what it costs to, every time you plug them in, and we're still using electrical energy that has to be produced by something, coal or oil. How economical is that? What does it cost to plug them in?
I mean, when you're going to plug in your vehicle at night again, you know, you're probably plugging in for less than a couple of dollars to for that. In fact, you'll probably be under a dollar. You know, you said that as far as production, you know, the electricity coming from coal or oil, that is one of the options and certainly maybe more prevalent, but there are other ways that you can pay for clean energy, just like Chris Schneider talked about in the previous program, where you can request that your energy is coming from clean sources like wind or hydro or solar, and that at least offers an option for you. And when it comes to plugging in,
that would be a little hard to get in the middle of northern Wisconsin.
Yeah, but I think one thing is you can plug in at night when the rates are quite a bit cheaper at night for almost every electrical company.
And does your electric company offer you the option to opt into getting some of your power from clean energy? Because there are, I mean, we have that here down in the central Wisconsin area. You can choose to pay a little bit of a surcharge on your energy, and then that some of your sources of power will come from clean energy.
We have that. My wife and I do that through at our home. We have that clean energy.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for calling. We've got another question here. Let's see. Your guest said that Insight has been made out of aluminum. Now, how does that rate for crash tests? And are most hybrid cars made out of different materials?
Yeah, the aluminum, of course, everyone thinks of, you know, your aluminum can and how easy that is to crush. And that's certainly, you know, not the case with the when you have aluminum panels. Actually, many cars today have different alloys in that do make them lighter. The aluminum for the Honda Insight was extruded aluminum. They make it for race cars, and so the frame itself is very strong. Strong as any, as other materials, so it certainly isn't a safety factor. In fact, has a 4-star crash rating.
It does have a 4-star.
Does.
Oh, okay. Well, I wanted we've had several people calling in and asking. I'm going back to Chris Schneider for just a minute. When he is going to be traveling around with his educational tour, and I wanted to mention again the website. If you go to www.hope3, and that's hope. HOPE, the number 3.org, you'll be able to get all of the information you need on that. And you folks have a website as well, Eric, and I wanted to talk about that.
Right. We have the greendriveexpo.com that lets people know about when our event is in the summertime. And then we'll also have links to our local Madison Hybrid Club as well, Madison Hybrid Group.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So if you go out to greendriveexpo.com, you can find the information about our event that's in the summer as well as the local group.
Greendriveexpo.com. That's the place to go. Well, I tell you what, are you going to be in the market for a new car soon, or are you hanging on to what you got?
Yeah, I've kind of been hanging on to what I've got. I've got about $116,000 on this, and I'll keep going. But boy, I wish I were, because there's some really exciting options coming up.
Yeah, if you were going to buy another one, what would you... If you had the money right now, what would you do?
Buy me that Lexus. I'd be happy. I'd be happy with that. Or you could buy me a house. You know, one of the two.
Well, Eric, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I hope we certainly have you back, and because we want to promote the Green Drive Expo when it comes up again. But maybe we'll have you back before then. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it very much. Eric Powers heads the Madison Hybrid Group. It holds Hybrid Fest Green Drive Expo. It's always the third weekend in July. It's held in Madison. And again, you can go online to greendriveexpo.com to learn more about the Madison Hybrid Group and about the expo itself. Coming up tomorrow, Bassam Shakashiri comes by to talk about science and research. And then Dr. Christine Quekeboom discusses pain management, especially in cancer patients. So those are a couple of topics coming up on tomorrow's program. And certainly in the meantime, I thank you very much for listening, and I hope you'll stay with us. We have lots of good things in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And thanks for listening.